Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
Job you never had.
But anyway, how's it going, Mike? How are you doing today?
I won't complain. At least with me, even though I'm half the size of Craig, I've got double the key fabulous knowledge, so.
That's true.
I think you're more than, or less than half. I mean, have you ever met Craig? He's a big dude.
He is a big, you know, the Brian rolls with, he's got a bunch of big dudes. Like, do you think he was just like that kid in elementary school that had to hide behind all of these other kids and, like, you know, paid for security?
My bodyguard.
Yeah.
So how are you guys?
We're doing fine.
We're doing okay. We were actually just about to start. So, Katrina, why don't you go ahead and get us going? I think we're, did you say we were on WrestleMania 8 here?
WrestleMania 8, it was April the 5th, 1992, in Indianapolis, Indiana, at the Hoosier Dome.
Hold on, it's going to take me a second to find it. I'm getting confused because of these damn fucking Roman numerals.
Oh, God. Okay.
Okay, which one, where is this one at? Okay, I know it's not Charging Straight Forever. Okay.
WrestleMania VIII is WrestleMania 8.
Okay. In Indianapolis?
Yes, in Indianapolis, the Hoosier Dome, and it drew 62,167 people. And this was one of those WrestleManias I was excited when I heard the original main event, but then I kind of threw me out of it when they changed it from, it was supposed to be Flair and Hogan, and changed it to Hogan instead, and Flair and Savage. I don't know, what do you guys think?
This was, at least for me, it was at this weird time because it was like, you know, I got into high school and I know, you know, I guess the children, you know, the wrestling you always watch as a kid is what sticks with you, you know, and then you start getting older and at some point you kind of fade out of it. And it was kind of worrisome coming on tonight because it's a bunch of WrestleManias at a time where, you know, my interests were, you know, kind of all over the place, you know, mostly like girls and, you know, football and stuff and the other things you do in high school. So it sort of was, it was kind of, my attention was pulled away, and not only that, it was not exactly the most epic time in the professional wrestling landscape, and it was just like, this starts like some of those weird shows, because it's like, I think this may have been the last one that had like Heenan and Monsoon, because I think Jim Ross came after that, and they had Savage and Bobby Heenan with him at WrestleMania 9, but this was, you know, I was being such a Ric Flair fan and growing up a Ric Flair fan, I was actually happy when they changed the match just because I really wanted to see, you know, there was Bret Hart and Roddy Piper on here, and I really wanted to see Ric Flair and Randy Savage. I thought it was awesome. The problem with that was the lead-up to it was so goofy and kind of dumb where they had, like, Mr. Perfect and, you know, the pictures of Ric Flair that he had with Elizabeth, and he threatened all that stuff, and it was just kind of like a really goofy way to get to most of the matches on here, and they kind of spent, to me at least, the next couple of years in that direction.
Yeah, well, I was actually pretty pissed off because I wanted to see Flair Hogan because, you know, for years and years and years, you had Ric Flair, champion of the NWA, and you had Hulk Hogan, champion of the WWF.
It's WrestleMania. It's like the perfect main event.
Yeah. It's WrestleMania. It's the main event. It's, you know, after all these years, you're finally going to see them, like, faced off, but unfortunately, for some reason, the WWF just never wanted to do Hogan Flair, and they pretty much scrapped it.
Well, I think that part of it was, I think maybe it didn't draw that much at the houses, because, you know, they did it at the house shows, like, several months before, and plus Hogan was planning on leaving right after, so he couldn't, like, exactly win the title if he was going to be leaving, and if he was going to just drop it to somebody, like, real quick. So I think that's how they kind of got out of doing that match.
Yeah, well, whatever. It still kind of pissed me off because it's something I wanted to see. And after all those years, it just never panned out until later into WCW when they were well past their prime and stuff.
This was like one of those stadium shows that didn't feel like a big deal. I mean, it had 62,000 people there, but I don't know. It just didn't feel like, you know, like the Silver Dome or the Sky Dome or something like that. This didn't feel like that big of a event, I guess.
Well, it's fucking Indianapolis, man. What the fuck's in Indianapolis besides the car race?
They were still recovering from the Bruisers territory from years earlier, but I think the thing with Hogan, too, you know, they love having that epic thing, you know, at WrestleMania, and him and, you know, Sid Vicious or Sid Justice at the time banging into each other. I you know, that loving big guys still even at that time. You know, I'm sure that helped play a part in it too, you know, on top of the fact that it didn't brawl all that great. And they had all those missteps with Hogan and Flair that they just could never get right. I mean, you know, the best thing about Flair and WWF during that time was the Royal Rumble. You know, and
yeah.
that was incredibly awesome. And then, again, they just kind of limped after this. But when you look at, like, the guys who were on the show and everything, you know, there's a lot of talent and everything, but it's like Tito Santana was in his Matador days, and it was just not, you know, the most exciting time, you know, leading into the new generation.
And it's also hard to remember, like, because the main event has a big part to do on how you remember a show. And when your main event can't follow your number four and your number six matches on the card, you know, I can see where at the end people, it might come off flat. Even though the two matches were totally awesome, you know, when by the time you get to the main event, it's just, you know, it's, you don't remember the show as good as it was. It falls flat because of how bad the main event was. But let's go ahead and let's start.
The Warrior return at the end, actually, I think, helped it a little bit more. You know, just that going off the air. With the Warrior returning. But anyway, first match, they had a dark match. The Bushwhackers beat the Beverly Brothers. They had Reba McEntire doing the national anthem, and Bobby Heenan gave the immortal line of, that's Tito Santana's sister, or Reba McEntire. So, this is one of those shows that... you know, Bobby Heenan and Gorilla, some of the stuff on here wasn't very good, but you had them in the commentary booth. You know, it's just like, it's just fun to listen to. So it kind of makes up for what's in the ring. And the first match was Shawn Michaels and Tito Santana in 10 minutes and 39 seconds. And this was Shawn Michaels' singles debut at WrestleMania. And this was when he was with Sherry, when Sherry was still doing the vocals on his theme song. There wasn't much to this match, just kind of something to get Shawn Michaels' singles career started.
Yeah, there's a way to heat up the crowd. I didn't think it was. Yeah, it was a good match. Like, there's nothing bad you can say about it. It was the perfect way to, like, you know, start passing the torch to, like, you know, this is going to be a guy who's going to be a singles performer. And, you know, it was just that, it's just Tito Santana and those green pants and the pink boots and everything. It was such a goofy way for him to come back.
Well, you said there was nothing bad you can say about this match. Yes, there is. Tito Santana's fucking gay-ass fucking costume. I mean, it's like in 1992 Tito Santana came out of the closet or something.
Now, as a Latino, could you relate to the Matador?
No, I cannot. I cannot relate to those pink things he, like, legging things he had on his calves. That just, like, freaked me out.
And anyway, the next match was The Undertaker in his second WrestleMania appearance. Went 2-0. He pinned Jake the Snake Roberts. This was right after his babyface turn.
Wasn't this like right after, like, Roberts, like, trapped his hand in the coffin, in the casket or whatever, and
yeah.
He, like, beat him up while he couldn't escape. And he was trying to drag him off in the fight back, but he couldn't.
He kept hitting him with the chair, and he's carrying the coffin, and he's going after the man. His hand is stuck. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, this was a squash match.
Yeah, but it was, you know, it was a good one. It was, yeah, it was like, I was surprised when I just saw it. It was like, it went 6:36, because just for some reason it seemed a lot, you know, it seemed a lot shorter, because it was Roberts, like, just with all the offense, and I think he DDT'd Undertaker like three times or something like that, and
yeah.
It wasn't the smoothest thing in the world or anything, but it was just, it was for The Undertaker, a good win. You know, Roberts was still, you know, relatively in shape at the time, you know, and looked good and was, you know, someone that, you know, people believe. But, you know, The Undertaker, every time he rose up, you know, he got that huge pop. And you know, it was just, you know, I was surprised it went that long, actually, because I just remember it being, you know, super short.
Yeah, it ended with Undertaker, he... gave him a tombstone pile driver or a phantom tombstone pile driver on the floor, because you could see his head came nowhere near the blue mat. So, and this was Jake Roberts' last match in WWF until 1996. He left right after this.
I guess that was what he was Sting when he first went feuding into WCW, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
in August, and and they feuded with Sting. So.
Yeah, and he wasn't there very much longer, and then he went to Mexico for a little while, and started pile driving midgets on the floor. But this is actually kind of sad when you really think about it, because Jake after this run when he left WWF, he was never the same. He was never the same performer or wrestler. He was, I don't want to say half of what he was, but he just, I guess he stopped caring after this run.
Maybe the snake was not devenomized when he stuck it on his face at Halloween Havoc later that year and it screwed him up. I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe that or something he may have found in Mexico or something like that. Who knows?
Anyway, in the next match, you had Bret Hart and Intercontinental Champion Roddy Piper in 13 minutes, 50 seconds to win Intercontinental title. And
so this is one of my favorite Bret Hart matches of all time.
Yeah, this was a great match. I was never much into Roddy Piper as a wrestler. I was more into him as a personality, because as a wrestler, he was just like your basic punch and kick and put a sleeper on a guy. No, I mean, he's
like Stone Cold Steve Austin, the biggest wrestling star of all time.
Well, no, Stone Cold could wrestle.
Well, yeah, he could, but he's by the end he was punch and kick. But
so Roddy Piper didn't have much of a wrestling style for me to get into when I watched his matches. He had good matches, it just wasn't much of a style that I liked.
What was awesome about this match, this is like the best part of this match, and it was the first time I've ever really seen like I guess you could say this kind of an angle, was basically they were both baby faces when this match was happening. And if I'm not mistaken, Bret was bleeding pretty bad, and it ended like toward the end, it ended where Piper had went out and he got a chair, and he was going to go, you could see it coming, like a heel turn coming, he was going to whack Bret and win the match, but then he rears back and the fans boo, and he pauses and he looks around, and he rears back and they boo again, and he pauses and he stares around, and it's like the fans like kept him from making a heel turn, and he like for some reason he decided to be the good guy and he threw down the chair, and in the end it ended up kind of costing him. And then the finish was awesome, because didn't he have like the sleeper on Bret, and Bret like rolled over and scored the pin while he still had the sleeper on?
Yeah, he pushed his feet off the ropes and he kind of just like cradled him up. It was actually a pretty cool looking pinfall.
I've seen it done like so many times since then, but he's the best. He was always the best one. The way he climbed up and flipped over, I mean, it was perfect.
Yeah, he did the same thing with Steve Austin at the Survivor Series during that first match they had. That's the way he won that match. So.
Yeah, I really liked this match, and at that time it was like the most I had like Piper in forever, you know, the long hair and everything, and just, you know, it's kind of funny in hindsight, too, to hear Piper talk about it. So, you know, I wouldn't, you know, lose that title to anybody but my cousin. I had to be my cousin, you know, the way he talks about Bret Hart, but it was by far, you know, it's kind of funny, it was the third thing on the show, but to me, by far, it was the best thing on it.
And they would, Piper always played it up like this was the only time at that point he got pinned in WWF. I was watching on YouTube. I was watching a Fijian strap match with he and Jimmy Snuka the other day, and he got pinned like 1-2-3 by Jimmy Snuka. So at least two times he got pinned up to that point. So,
and it's amazing. It's amazing how long Roddy Piper kayfabe. I mean,
yeah.
I think the first time he ever stopped doing it was like when he did Wrestling Observer Live that one time, and I mean, or right before that time, and. Yeah, every interview he did, it was like listening to like Fritz or the Von Erichs. You know what I mean? He kayfabed a long, long time.
Next, he had an 8-man tag team match. He had Big Boss Man, Virgil, Sergeant Slaughter, and Jim Duggan defeated the Nasty Boys, the Repo Man, and the Mountie when Virgil pinned Brian Knobbs in 5 minutes and 22 seconds. And only thing memorable about this match was you had Ray Combs doing the announcing from Family Feud.
I wouldn't even remember that. I have no recollection of this match whatsoever.
I remember he would do they would do on Family Feud. They ask question. They would say the consensus was that with the Nasty Boys you have two people sharing one brain or something like that, or you know the Mounties success can be summed up in one word: pure luck.
Well, the Mets did have probably the most underrated gimmick of all time, the Repo Man.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Virgil.
No, I was going to say, well, what's his name? Crusher Khrushchev, or what the hell is his real name?
Barry Darso.
Barry Darso.
Barry Darso, okay. Barry Darso, the former Crusher Khrushchev, who was always like a Russian who wasn't as good as Nikita, and then he was one of the Demolition, and whatever. And then all of a sudden, he turned into like a cartoon character, wearing like what you would see like someone in prison or something, and then carrying like a tire or whatever. I mean, and then he's like got his little Burger
King. Like a Lone Ranger.
Yeah, like the Lone Ranger mask, or that hamburger dude from McDonald's. That's actually who he looked like. And he'd have to smirk when he came out. It just, I don't know. It was the stupidest, one of the stupidest, baddest gimmicks of all time. But for some reason, it always made me laugh when he came out.
Was it worse than the golfer Barry Darso on WCW Saturday Night?
Yeah. No, that was better than the Blacktop Bully.
Well, he got awesome there. Like, the one thing about WCW Saturday Night, do you remember when he would just, I guess this is when Jimmy Hart was booking it, but each week he'd come out in a different gimmick.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And
speaking of Virgil,
I gotta correct myself. I said he was a Russian. He wasn't a Russian. He was a Russian synthesizer.
That's right. He was Crusher Darso first.
That's right. He was Crusher Darso in like Mid-South, and then he was Crusher Khrushchev. Speaking of Virgil, everybody go to lonelyvirgil.net. It's awesome. All the Lonely Virgil sightings.
Now, Ed, if you see Virgil in New York over this WrestleMania weekend, and he's down there in the subway, and he's looking to sell some of his publicity, will you feel sorry for him and take him out for a drink at Rick's Cabaret?
I'll take him out, and then I'll tell him to put his stuff on Brian's bill.
You either bump into Virgil or bump into Bruce Beefcake snorting cocaine, and they think it's anthrax or something.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a lot of drugs around WrestleCon.
This show also had the debut of Lex Luger, and they did a little satellite deal where Luger was in his home in Atlanta. He had just signed, he wasn't able to sign with the WWF, so because he had to no compete with WCW for like a year. He just left, but they got around that, and he signed with the WBF, so they could still have him on the shows. He just couldn't do any wrestling, and so they did like just this little interview, and they're still called Total Package at this time. So that was interesting.
He didn't have that stupid mirror, did he?
No, he was
not yet.
Yes. He was still pretty big too.
When he came out that first time as with the mirror and he was the fucking narcissist, all I could think about for the longest time was like, what the fuck is a narcissist? Because there was no Google at the time, you know. I wasn't going to go find a dictionary, but I was like, it took me forever to find out what the fuck a narcissist was.
And, go ahead.
That was like the old joke of the Widowmaker. Even though I love the name, I thought it was like, all right, cool. Just, you know, the man just kills other men and makes widows. If you think about it, it was just kind of like a goofy name. Like the Widowmaker, Barry Windham, and the narcissist, Lex Luger, although I got to be honest, I did pop for the sparklers. I always thought that was a good way to put it over the top.
Well, the Widowmaker, that was the name he came up with because it was like there was a bull in Texas that's like a rodeo bull that had gored a bunch of cowboys, and so they named it the Widowmaker. And that's kind of where that name came from. So.
Yeah, but I always thought that was a great name, or like the Pro Wrestling Illustrated, everybody would make fun of it, which I thought that was actually awesome. And
some people say that, gave him that stupid Widowmaker gimmick. It wasn't a stupid gimmick. It was Barry Windham with a nickname. It wasn't... He didn't have cobwebs hanging off of his ass or anything like that.
It wasn't a gimmick. Back, you know, that's where people get confused. Back then, well, this is when it's at a time when, yes, everyone was slowly transitioning to becoming a gimmick, but there was still, you know, the Widowmaker wasn't a gimmick.
It was a black glove. He had the black glove that he put on in WCW or in the NWA, you know, kind of the throwback to his father, and that's all it was going to be. It was just going to be Barry Windham in, like, a black bandana and that glove, and he was just going to kick ass.
Yeah.
Next match had Randy Savage pinned Ric Flair in 18 minutes and 5 seconds to win the WWF title. And
this
it built this up.
Like Chip was talking about how, you know, the angle is kind of goofy. I disagree. This was, like, one of the greatest WWE angles of all time because we got to see the most skin Elizabeth ever showed for, like, years and years after this.
That's a good point. I'll give you that one.
He was at the pool in a bathing suit, just fucking... at that time, you know, the women didn't really show anything. I remember it was a big deal when she took her skirt off that one time. But, I mean, she looked so damn good in those photos. So made up for every that right there made it a 5-star match right there.
That is the fact that
the
lead
photo
off.
Chop. Great photo.
Everybody
chop.
Could at least talk on this too, because like the stuff with Ric Flair, Kurt Hennig, and Mean Gene just all playing off each other, all that stuff was really awesome too.
And those pictures, that was like Photoshop before Photoshop was cool, you know. I mean, they did a great job with the fucking
Flair
magazine.
Sweater.
Yeah. I mean, they're sitting there watching you, and they, you can see in the picture, sitting there watching like Tuesday Night Titans or something like that, and it was awesome. And then they teased that they're going to show the best picture at the Hoosier Dome, which I guess was a tease, which some people got mad at. I didn't, because that's all the whole thing was bullshit to begin with, so I wouldn't expect some big centerfold or anything like that. But
yeah, this was a great match. I think this was the first match these guys ever had together. Pretty sure it was.
Yeah, Nate, I don't think it's not like they would have crossed. I don't think they ever crossed paths anywhere else.
Unless it was a tag
then.
Match, you know, just like a tag match when Flair first came in or something like that. But I think this was the first singles match with these guys.
Yeah, I don't think that. And I know that they wouldn't have wrestled in the territories because Savage's had territory was basically a blackball territory, and there was no way they were going to send a world champion to that territory.
Yeah, he was just there, and then he was in Memphis, and he did some stuff in Georgia too. But yeah, I don't think they ever crossed paths before this.
No, because he came in as a popo in the Mid Atlantic for a little bit, like way way early in the game. But yeah, again, he wouldn't have been at Flair's level at that time anyway.
Yeah,
and even if they did, there wouldn't be any footage of it, unfortunately.
One of the things I remember about this match later on was that Ric Flair almost got fired for doing a blade job.
And his blade job wasn't nothing compared to Bret Hart's blade job. Bret was looking like Kerry Von Erich in the Kerry Lawler match almost. And Flair had, you know, he had some color, but, I mean, big, big difference, but he almost got fired, and Brett got away with it, even though everyone knew he played it.
Well, Flair was so blatant, though. Bret Hart did this a couple of times, where, you know, I think one was, I thought, relatively, not recently, but, I mean, I, you know, there were a couple times where he would always say it was a Davey Boy?
It was a match of Davey Boy, one of those In Your House shows.
Yeah, he would always say he did it hard way, and they always knew he was full of shit, but you could never actually prove it. And he did that a couple times, and this was another one. And yeah, the only thing that got Flair was he just wasn't smooth about it, and it was blatantly obvious.
And the thing is, really, if he really wanted to, he wouldn't even need to play job. All he had to do was let Bret knuckle punch him in the forehead a bunch of times, and he would have started busting open by that point. Of course, I think it'd probably be easier to catch yourself than to let Bret knuckle punch you in the head.
Think about that story Mick Foley told about Harley Race. I think it was Harley Race where he just kept doing it over and over and over and nothing would happen. Maybe it was Terry Funk, and then it was finally just like, okay, stop it now. Yeah, I'll take the blade in that case.
He said, please stop hitting me.
But wasn't there another match where they were kind of going to do the same thing and Foley was already bleeding and Hardy got pissed off because he didn't have to hit him after all?
God damn it, he's already busted open. Anyway, this was a great match. I think I like the Bret Hart match better. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so too. Of all of you, you know, anybody said either one of them. I mean, again, these two were so much better than they, at least to me, than anything else on there. I mean, it wasn't even funny. I'm sure there's somebody really liked Hulk and Sid because they were a big Hulk fan. But yeah, I mean, by far, you know, it was those two other matches were by far the best thing on here.
Yeah, the finish, he just kind of like rolled him up and schoolboarded him and held the tights to win. I didn't much care for that finish. It was just kind of weird. So next we had Earthquake and Typhoon defeated the tag team champion Money Incorporated, Ted DiBiase and IRS via countout. Yeah, Earthquake and Typhoon, I just tune out when I see those names.
Yeah, which is sad, though, because before the Million Dollar Man had a good run in the WWF. But these two guys, before they got to the WWF, were some of the best workers in the world. I mean, Ted's like always going to be considered the greatest wrestler who never had the world championship. And then Erwin R. Chrysler or Mike Rotundo or whatever, he always changes, it seemed like. Not the greatest wrestler, not the most colorful wrestler, but he was a damn good worker, and I always enjoyed his matches. I got to see a little bit of the Florida stuff, some of his Georgia stuff, you know, him and Barry when they first came in the first time had the good run, and then became over to Archeister, and it was just, you just couldn't take it. I mean, now, looking back, I love the Erwin Archeister gimmick, but at the time, it's just, I couldn't get over it, and I just thought it was stupid, and just took so much
it
away.
It does kind of fit being with Ted DiBiase. It does kind of make sense.
Yeah, even at that point, they were still a great team. It's just like, I just couldn't look at them the same.
I like Rotunda better when he was in the varsity club. I thought he was really good there.
Yeah. But when he was a young baby face just going to territory to territory, he was really good.
Yeah.
He really was. I mean, he was, I hated the IRS thing. Like at the time, like looking back, and as I, you know, got older and watched it back, he was so good, and I always hated the character because like he, when he left WWF and him and Wyndham, again, that was probably the first time I had seen him, and I really liked him, and then they disappeared because Barry left, and it was Rotundo and Spivey for a while, and it's like. He went to Florida, and then he came up to the Mid-Atlantic, and it was like, you know, all right, he's Mike Rotunda, no big deal. But then the Varsity Club was awesome. And then, you know, and then him going back, and then it's like now he's IRS, and that was, you know, stupid. And then he had the Michael Wall Street and VK Wall Street and all the other stuff. But when he was a member of a tag team, he was great. And you talk about, like, Bobby Eaton and all these other, you know, great tag team wrestlers and tag team specialists. He was one of those guys, too, and he doesn't really, you know, kind of get the credit for it because even when Kevin Sullivan and they had, what was her name, Layla Meow, Kimona from ECW came in and they did the Varsity thing, even though it was so cheap and cheesy and over the top, I still bought Mike Rotundo then, even after all these years of having 75 zillion goofy gimmicks and wrestling and slacks and everything. He was just made for tag teams. He was great.
I just thought it was funny, out of all the things that they're going to bring back and 1999, it's almost the year 2000. Vince Russo brings back the Varsity Club. It's just the most absurd thing I've ever heard.
Kevin Sullivan on, you know, commentary talking about, you know, double secret probation and just being a complete douche was great.
Then they had Owen Hart defeated Skinner in 1 minute and 11 seconds. All I remember is he spits his tobacco juice all over Owen Hart's face. And then Owen Hart rolled him up. That's about it. When he was still wearing his MC Hammer pants.
He was wearing those fucking, like Coco B wearing those fucking pants that were like 10 sizes too big or something.
High energy.
Yeah.
But the thing with Skinner, it was so funny. is not that much longer before, Skinner was like one of the ugliest dudes in WWE with his beard and his fucking tobacco and just kind of got balled in a little bit. This dude was a fucking heartthrob not that long before. I mean, the Fabulous Ones were like, you know, they were big before the Rock and Roll Express. I mean, they were like him and Stan Lane. They were like heartthrobs, and you know, all the chicks loved them. And then all of a sudden, he's fucking Skinnered. And he has that like put alligator thing on his like necklace or something.
Somebody put it up on Twitter. I forget who it was, but they're like, Alberto Del Rio, when he was mocking Jack Swagger, looked like some sort of remedial Fabulous One. That's kind of true.
Oh, man.
The next match was the debut of Tatanka at WrestleMania.
He defeated
Rick Martel in 4 minutes and 30 seconds.
Did he have the pink hair at this time?
Yeah.
Yep.
Wasn't it like the blood of his ancestors?
I don't know. I just remember he said they had the Lumbee Indians dancing in the ring for his entrance. And Bobby Heenan said there's a bunch of Lumbee Indians in the ring dancing. How do you meet an Indian? You know, they say, hey, how are you? Hey, how are you? You know, that's how they greet people.
did you guys ever see, I had this, like, you know, back in the day, you know, when the TVs had antennas.
Yeah.
I used to be able to find this fucking low red fucking channel that had, like, different wrestling on every week. Like, it had from Florida, it had where Billy and Bart, before they went to WWE, they showed them one night. They showed, like, Tony Rumble, Tony Atlas, and Ricky Steamboat on another night. They had Memphis on another night. And they had a fucking Low Rent Georgia promotion, and it was, like, the main star was War Eagle Chris Chavez.
North American Wrestling Association.
Maybe. I don't remember the name, but he was, like,
the
main star. And I always thought he had potential and he could become a big star. And he kind of had potential. It's just like the gimmick just, you know, to me, it was never a main event gimmick in WWE when he had, you know, with the pink hair and stuff, even though he had like
a
long
win
streak. Yeah, he had a long win streak, but then when it ended, it didn't really matter. When he went heel, he just stagnated and never became anything after that.
I always found it strange. You know, remember, it was just like 3 or 4 years ago, he got another WWE run. Just so strange to talk to the back. Like,
wasn't that like Kurt Angle's fault or something?
I don't know.
like it was like the Marty Jannetty thing, but with Tatanka's.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't remember. I could be wrong.
Yeah, because they were doing that gold medal challenge or something like that when you go to a town or something. I think he was on Raw or something like that, and he's in Las Vegas or something, and there's Indian Reservation out there, so Tatanka showed up or something. I don't remember. Something silly.
Hey, the only thing I know, it was no Rodney Mack White Boy Challenge.
No, it wasn't that good. And then the white boy that comes out is Jewish, and he ends the streak. So, this is Goldberg. So, anyway, in the main event, Hulk Hogan beat Sid Justice in 12 minutes and 44 seconds via DQ. This is one of the worst main events they've had in WrestleMania history, I'd say.
Why would they give it 12 minutes of all things?
I don't know.
Well, and even more than that, have it end by DQ, too, which is, you know, you think about how we talk about now, like, you know, sending people home happy and all that sort of stuff, you know, especially at WrestleMania, you know, Hogan defeating Sid by DQ, and there was stuff that was, you know, set up because of it, but even with that said, it's still, you know, a deflating way to end things, you know, especially with the way they had it at the Royal Rumble and, you know, that Sid eliminates Hogan and, you know, vice versa, and all that happens, and Flair survives, and Sid goes dirty, and, you know, again, it just was not, not exactly the best way to end WrestleMania.
And I got to the point as a fan where, you know, I'm more into the Flairs. I'm more into the Shawn Michaels, the Bret Harts. I'm kind of over the big guy stuff at this point, like with the Hogans and the Sid Justices and guys and the Warriors and guys like that. I just prefer, like, the more technical wrestlers. So that just didn't do anything for me. And I just remember this was where Papa Shango made his debut, except he did it late. So Sid Justice had to kick out of the leg drop, even though it was never actually put over that he kicked out of the leg drop because he did his run-in too late. So, and then Harvey Whippleman interfered and I think hit Hogan with his little doctor's bag, and that was the disqualification. And then the Warrior returned.
Well, at this time, Sid Justice was, it was so, he's always been so fucking big and imposing and just looks like a million bucks and just one of the scariest motherfuckers ever. But this was at the point where you're finally realizing that he just didn't have it in the ring to back up the look. And, He never seemed to take too long because he'd rather go play softball instead.
Didn't it just have that? He had a certain charisma. Just people looked at him and just for some reason popped for him all the time, which I think was.
He's one of the scariest looking men of all time. I mean, he's like one of the scariest looking dudes. I mean, if the dude got even today, even though he's not in the best shape, if he looked at me pissed off, I'd fucking run.
Yeah, I mean,
he looked like a cartoon character. It's like there's some dudes who are big and scary, but it's like, you know, he was just like, you know, just a huge, the way he was cut, just how he was just a big, scary, scary dude. And figures he'd be somebody that, like, beer league softball.
But then when the bell rang and he opened his mouth, it was kind of over. He kind of got all marble mouth, and he just kind of tripped over his words all the time and kind of did a bunch of stupid promos. I always thought the whole "I rule the world" stuff was a bunch of stupid bullshit. Stupid sound.
Well, I can't remember what pay-per-view it was. Remember he tried to, like, you know, he's like, "All right, let's do it again." And means he's like, "We're live." And he went right back into cutting the promo.
That was the In Your House. It was Jim Ross. So they were doing, like, they were on the pre-show and he was doing a promo. He said, "Cut that. Let's do it again." He said, "We're live, pal." So.
And the thing I remember about this
deal with Howard Nash, where he said, "I have half the brain you do," or something like that. I don't know. Something like it look stupid.
It was one of those, you know, "I'm not half as smart as you think I am" sort of things.
Anyway, we went to WrestleMania 9 on April 4th, 1993, in Las Vegas, Nevada. At Caesar's Palace, drawing 15,000, 45 fans. This is first outside WrestleMania? Because others were in domes, right?
Yeah, I think
They brought Jim Ross out in the toga.
Yes.
Okay.
Funny story is, do you remember, this is when he had gotten fired by WCW. Do you remember when he was doing, like, he had his radio show on? In Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, WSB.
WSB, he used to play that all the time because it was his show, but it was more the WCW show because he was working there. So, you know, they'd do wrestling talk and stuff like that. I was actually able to pick it up in Mississippi if I sat down on my car on a Sunday night. I was able to pick it up. So one night I'm listening. This is after he's left WCW, and all of a sudden he makes a big announcement that he's joined the WWF, and he introduces Vince McMahon on the WCW radio show, and they're making this announcement that he's coming in, and that the next week, on the last hour of the radio show, they're gonna broadcast live the last hour of WrestleMania 9. So I got to sit out of my car and listen to the last hour of WrestleMania 9 on the radio. It was pretty funny.
Wow, that's good.
That's awesome. Yeah. Actually, I was always one of those people. It's like I liked radio. So, like, to hear, like, descriptive stuff. I know WCW tried it, like, once from L.A. I think that was the one where Jericho beat Six for the Cruiserweight title, and they tried to do one over the internet, and it just didn't work out. But,
yeah,
you know, for, if you actually have two people that are really good and descriptive, like, listen to old boxing ones. I wish somebody would actually do that with wrestling, you know, have a Jim Ross and even, like, a basketball match, like a Sean Grande or a Robert Flores or one of those guys. I that would actually be really unique and really good. Maybe not for an entire show, but, you know, at least for an hour or something like that, that would actually be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim Ross made his debut there with Randy Savage, and remember Bobby Heenan coming out backwards on a llama or a camel or something? I don't really.
That was awesome. That was...
Savage came out with the Virgins on the, like, the sedan or something like that with the Virgins. So, beating grapes. I liked the setup. A lot of people didn't like the show. I enjoyed it. It was wacky enough that I wasn't angered by it. I didn't think it sucked or anything, but that was just me. And
I hated it. A couple years later, I loved it.
Yeah. We had Finkus Maximus doing the ring announcing. Howard Finkel. That was his name, Finkus Maximus. And the dark match with Tito Santana pinned Papa Shango. Then we had Tatanka beat Shawn Michaels via countout in an Intercontinental title match in 18 minutes 13 seconds. And this is where Luna Vachon made her debut, came out with Shawn Michaels because, you know, Sherry was doing, she was the baby face at this point because Shawn had, you know, smashed her with the mirror and then never called her or something like that. Or he had gotten, Marty Jannetty, he pulled her in the way when Marty Jannetty swung the mirror. And so she took the mirror shot and he kind of dumped her. So.
And I remember Bobby put over Luna huge and was just dogging Sherry and just making fun of her the whole time and put Luna over, like, a zillion bucks, too. Just to the point of, like, lusting over her, and they were making fun of him for that. So I can't take my eyes off of her. And, again, this is where, you know, Tatanka has goofed. Because I guess it wasn't, I'm trying to think of how long it was after this where Sherry ended up, you know, turning on him for helping and Shawn laid him out again.
Then we had Rick and Scott Steiner beat the Head Shrinkers, Samu and Fosu, and Scott Finn and Samu. I remember this being a pretty good match. They always had good matches. They just beat the piss out of each other.
Yeah, it was just four big dudes who just like to fucking beat the crap out of each other. And, it was real impressive when, you know, the Spaniards would suplex the shit out of the Samoans. And
they had a great high spot here where they had, they put Rick Steiner on Fatu's shoulders, and Samu came off the top rope and was going to go for like a body press, but Rick Steiner spun around and turned into a belly-to-belly suplex. So that was a pretty cool move.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I thought this match was fucking awesome. I always like the Samoans anyway, and you know, the Steiners, both of them in WCW. So, you know, I guess the only thing in hindsight for me was it was probably a little bit too long. But it was four dudes just beating the shit out of each other, and that spot was awesome. And then you know, Rick Scott Steiner at the time still able to pull off a good looking Frankensteiner is what actually ended the match. But yeah, a lot of this stuff looked like it hurt because it did.
I always liked Samo. He was one of the few that took that one bump where he would get his head caught in the ropes, in the top and second rope. I always thought that was really, like, impressive when he would do that, just, like, spin his head through the ropes like that. I always thought that was fucking awesome. It didn't work out well for Mick Foley, but he never had a problem. I mean, he lost his ear.
I always thought, you know, Fatu had the longer career in the WWE and the more famous, but I always thought Samu was way better than him at that time. Well, at least at that time.
Oh, yeah, he was around for years, though, too. He was, what, Samoa number three, Samula or whatever it was. So,
he was right, he had a
good run before even that. Who was it? It was Samoan Savage was not CBLT, but Tonga Kid. I thought those three, and I don't know if Ed, you had a chance to see them in Texas, like when they were there against, I think it was Buddy Roberts was the one managing them then against like Steve Cox, Michael Hayes, and I forget who else it was. Like, they were good right from the jump, too.
Yeah,
I remember, actually, the Tonga Kid actually came to, like, Southwest for, like a cup of coffee. I just remember they had, like, they're doing, like, a promo on, it was something, it was like an, like when, I guess it was when those little ATVs came out. So he jumps on this ATV and he starts like jumping around and he's lifting this freaking ATV off the ground. And I mean, it was tripped out, but it's so amazing to see how much of a difference it was from the Tonga Kid to the Samoan Savage. I mean, he was just like, yeah, all the way, because he looked more impressive than Jimmy Snuka, who was jacked up back in the day. I mean, I always thought he was one of those guys that just never became as big as he should have. I mean, he had an okay career, but I always thought when he came out as a Tonga Kid, I was like, man, this kid's going to be a superstar, and it just never really happened.
He had the best, like, flying body press, or the highest flying body press I've ever seen anybody have. He was I actually liked him better when he was with Haku with the Islanders. I thought they were they were a great team. Moving on, we had Doink the Clown, who was Matt Bourne, pinned Crush in 8 minutes and 28 seconds with the double doink finish. I'm pretty sure this was Steve Lombardi or Steve Kern or somebody. I don't know. But
there's two doinks.
Before we talk about the Bourne as Doink, who was the better, the other better, as the three, who would have been the second best, Ray Apollo or fucking the Brooklyn Brawler?
I didn't think they were, any of them were the best after Matt Bourne.
Well, if you had to pick one after Matt Bourne.
Does Steve Kern count? Didn't he have wouldn't he fill in as a Doink?
Yeah, he would fill in as a Doink.
How would you go Apollo, I think?
Yeah,
I think
I'd go
with the one with the midget, with Jerry Lawler, that one Survivor Series. I like that one. I don't know which one it was. I enjoyed all that stuff with the little kinks and stinky and queasy and cheesy and sleazy and all those motherfuckers.
But I don't know how it was for you guys, too, but, like, after this, too, like, we graduated high school, like, in that time, like, junior, senior year, and then graduating high school, where they would work the independent scene. And it was like you'd get Doink and Dink at, like, you know, the Hempstead County High School in, you know, North Bumfuck, you know, wherever it was. It's kind of ridiculous.
Now, the Crush, was this Kona Crush that he beat?
Yeah.
Yes.
This was when he was babyface. I think he knocked him out with like a plaster cast or something like that.
This is after he got arrested for fucking guns and steroids in Florida, in Hawaii, right?
No, this was, that was later
before?
On when he was, that was like in 95.
Oh, okay, my bad.
So,
and I gotta admit, the double doink thing where they like do the pantomime, like they're looking in the mirror. That was, I'll admit, I thought that was really funny. That, like, I think it was like Vince McMahon, too, whoever was like, he's tearing off his arm. I'm trying to think if it was this one or not. And Randy Savage just dead pants. I think it's a cast.
Next, they had Razor Ramon pin Bob Backlund in 3 minutes and 45 seconds.
Poor Bob Backlund, they always had to do the job to the fucking click.
Well, I never got into Bob Backlund.
Well, you...
When he was the crazy Bob Backlund, he was good, but whenever the bell rang, it was like it was over with. I just had no interest.
Yeah, well, I was going to go see him be inducted into the Hall of Fame. So, Backlund is awesome.
And I still want to know why his title reign was like the worst promotional tactic of the year, like 1983 or something. I don't understand that one.
Hey, they think the board is snarky. They were all snarky back then, too.
Oh, God. I read some of those old Observers, and, God, they're fucking assholes, man. I'm glad I wouldn't have access to the Observers back then. That hates his fucking business. Jesus. You had WWF Tag Team Champion Ted DiBiase and IRS beat Hulk Hogan and Brutus beefcake by DQ in 18 minutes and 27 seconds. I remember the story going around was Randy Savage had snuck the shit out of Hulk Hogan. That's why his eye was fucked up. When actually he just had like a wave runner accident or something over the weekend before that. Do you remember this?
That's what Bree Bryan Blair said WrestleMania Observer Live, that it was a wave runner, that kid Hogan. But this is like an urban legend that will forever stay. Even 20 years ago, people will be talking about, oh, you remember when Hulk Hogan had the black eye and Randy Savage kicked his ass? We're talking to Elizabeth. Because he was pissed off because Elizabeth was hanging out with Linda.
Yeah, they were divorced at this time, so. This wasn't when they were working together making money, so they hated each other. When they ain't time to work together and make money, they just best to friends.
But why did this match go 18 minutes and 27? I mean, I know it's Diddy Austin and Rotunda to carry people, but I don't ever want to see
I don't know why this match fucking happened in the first place. I don't know what Bruce Beefcake was brought back.
Hey, putting a lot of sympathy on Beefcake, plus the whole shtick and everything. Yeah, I can see it. I went 18. I can only really remember, like, the ring entrance and, like, the end of the match. That's really about it. It's not a whole lot of memorable stuff in between, and it kind of just gets forgotten about altogether that Hulk Hogan wrestled in the middle of the card because of what ended up happening at the end.
Remember Bruce Beefcake had the face mask that they said that NASA had made for him? Okay, so we don't get no
shot
in the face.
I remember that. Now that you brought it up, I remember that.
I was talking about sympathy for Beefcake. I remember he did his return promo at the Manhattan Center at the One Raw. He's talking about his wife left him and his parents died and said, what's he got to do? And somebody screamed, kill yourself.
Well, now he works for the subway system and does cocaine on the job.
I think the only thing I remember about this match is, I don't know, I think Hulk Hogan gave Natalie Cole some cash or something. She was at ringside. Nat King Cole's daughter. So, I don't know. This was just a match. With nothing to it. Next we had Lex Luger pinned Mr. Perfect. You had Narcissist against Mr. Perfect. I just remember they did the stuff with the sparklers coming out of the mirrors, and it was so windy, it was like blowing sparklers everywhere. It was outside.
Yeah, I remember that. I almost don't remember Perfect even being a face at this time.
Yeah, because he had just done the remember when they fired Warrior and Savage needed a partner? He was going against Ric Flair and Razor Ramon. And so he asked Mr. Perfect to be his partner. So,
yeah, okay, I remember now. It's coming
back.
That's
when Perfect came back. And then Perfect beat Flair in the Loser Leaves Town match on Raw a couple months earlier. So.
Yeah, I forget how that even went. I can't even remember why Flair slapped Perfect. And did he blame the loss on or whatever it was? Like, you know, you're a shitty coach now or whatever it was. But, yeah, he got thrust back in.
It was when they were doing that prime time where they had, like, the round table of people, you know, just, I think they had, like, Slick and Hillbilly Jim and Gorilla and Vince and Perfect and Bobby Heenan, and they were all trying to convince Mr. Perfect to be Savage's partner, and Heenan kept getting upset, and they finally started insulting Perfect too much, and then Heenan said, you're not going to be anybody's partner, and then he slapped Perfect across the face, and then Perfect dumped a pitcher of water on him and said, look, Savage, a wet weasel, or something like that. And so that's how he became the partner. So I just remember at the end of this match, you know, Luger pinned Perfect, and I think Perfect had his foot on the rope, and then they go backstage, and Luger's just sitting there chatting with Shawn Michaels, and Perfect attacks Luger, and then Shawn Michaels attacks Perfect with a broom or something like that and beats shit out of him, and that's how that feud got started. So.
Well, at least it led to something better than that match.
Yeah. Speaking of better, we had The Undertaker beat the Giant Gonzalez in 7 minutes and 33 seconds by disqualification.
Four and three-quarter stars.
This was, oh, God. This may have been Undertaker's worst WrestleMania match. And he does a bad one.
It's impossible to have a bad match with someone who's 7 foot tall and he's wearing a muscular bodysuit with patches of fur, right? That's just what makes it awesome right there, let alone what they did in the ring.
Hey, at least him in that bodysuit made more sense than him as, like, you know, the Battlestar Galactica headpiece or whatever it was, and as El Gigante in WCW. It, you know, it was amazing to see that they actually got him, but he was such a freak show that I guess they figured why not. But, you know, The Undertaker basically having to push him down with the clothesline. I mean, everybody says George Gonzalez, nicest guy in the whole wide world. Obviously, one of the shittiest wrestlers of all time, but it wasn't exactly his fault. He was kind of forced into it, but God damn, this was a brutally bad match. And one of those things, in hindsight, it's like, thank God The Undertaker somehow, he never lost at WrestleMania in these early days, because, oh God, what a hell of a thing to look back on if he would have lost to Giant Gonzalez, because he was huge.
Everyone, you know what, one of the biggest lies in wrestling is saying that the Giant Gonzalez was from Argentina. He's not from Argentina. They found that creature from the Zucker film or whatever, whatever film, and they found him and they shaved him down, and that was Giant Gonzalez, dude. He was a Sasquatch. That's why he was so dumb.
And then taught him to play basketball and wrestle?
Well, he was still an animal, so he had to have some athletic ability.
I still can't figure that out. Just because Ted Turner had the Goodwill Games, like, you know, he somehow acquired a contract for him to play for the Hawks, and it's like, I have no idea exactly what that was or how exactly, just because you're under contract with the Atlanta Hawks, you could be moved around within the Turner organization. What if they didn't decide to make him a wrestler and instead had him, like, you know, head up creative for the new TNT?
I think the best rating ever, matches he's ever had was, I think Dave talked about how a player carried him to like a 2.5-star match or something like that in WCW.
It was
literally a 7'3" broomstick.
I mean, I saw like some of those when they were facing each other, and I'd see them have Flair up in those press slams. I bet Flair was just like fucking scared to death. So the end was near. Anyway, the next match was the main event. You had Yokozuna pin Bret Hart to win the WWF title in 8 minutes 55 seconds. You know, this kind of gets overshadowed because of what happened afterwards, but this is actually a pretty decent match. I thought Bret Hart wrestled it pretty well for, you know, for a guy that big. He was pretty smart the way he wrestled it. I don't know if you guys remember.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, it's one of the better Yokozuna matches. It's one of the reasons Yokozuna gets kind of considered a good worker for his size, you know.
Yeah.
I thought looking at Billy Bret Hart having him in the sharpshooter, that was kind of stupid. But, you know, this big fat dude, I don't know how much sharpshooter is going to do.
I think he's still like the most roundest wrestler I've ever seen in my life, dude. I mean, it's like if you measured him from like belly button to belly button, I don't think you could ever. Well, I'm sure back in the day, like those two twins or whatever. But I mean, from like 80 on, I don't think there's ever a wrestler as fat as Yokozuna.
No way.
Huh?
I can't remember any.
Yeah.
And then, of course, at the end of the match, you know, Yokozuna won the title. And then Hulk Hogan comes out to tell the referee what happened was Bret Hart had Yokozuna in the sharpshooter, and Mr. Fuji threw the salt in his face, and Yokozuna pinned him, and Hogan came out to tell the ref what happened. And then Mr. Fuji, like any brilliant manager, says, "So we will put the title on the line right here and now. It's you, Hulk Hogan." After his man just wrestled like for 10 minutes, and so Bret Hart tells him to go in the ring, and of course the moment that I'm sure most of the Observer subscribers vomited at the time, Hulk Hogan pinned Yokozuna in 21 seconds to win the title. I thought this was it was goofy, but I don't know. I didn't hate it. I hated Bret Hart losing the title, but I didn't really mind Hogan winning it.
I didn't like it because, like, you know, the slowly but surely, like, when Bret became champion, the work rate was starting to get better in the WWE. And then it was like, to me, it was like they were backtracking. You know, it's like, what? It's like I'm starting to get into it more, and now you're going back to Hogan.
I just thought it was a cheap way to do it. Because, again, I like Bret Hart, and I was, at this time, more than sick of ever seeing Hulk Hogan and, you know, seeing the orange tan and the yellow, you know, yellow and red shtick. And it was just, you know, it was just kind of a shitty way to do it, especially because, you know, it was 22 seconds, boom, it's over. But, you know, I guess it's, quote-unquote, sent the people home happy, sort of, unless you were Bret Hart.
Like all those years later when you become a little bit smarter and read, like, the Observers and stuff, kind of. And then Hogan wouldn't even put Bret Hart over, like, at SummerSlam later in the year to, you know, to...
Much less fucking up his entrance into WCW in 97 at Starcade, you know, at WCW's WrestleMania. It's like,
yeah.
Bret Hart can never really get away from it.
Yeah. Oh. Moving on, they had... next year was WrestleMania 10, and it was March 20th, 1994, in New York City at Madison Square Garden, drawing 18,065 people. In the dark match, you had the Heavenly Bodies, Jimmy Del Rey, and Tom Pritchard, beat the Bushwhackers, and Del Rey pinned Butch Miller.
I would have liked to have seen this match about 12 years earlier.
Yeah, really. I can't believe the Bushwhackers. I was thinking, God, I can't believe Tito was still getting paid, like, the year before. I can't believe the Bushwhackers were still getting paid in 94.
this was another two-man show with Owen and Brett, and then you had the of course, the ladder match, which you get to here in just a little bit. In the opener, Owen Hart pinned Bret Hart in 20 minutes and 21 seconds. Still won the best matches in WrestleMania history.
I think it's probably, for sure, top five, might be top three. I mean, it is one of the best technical matches I've ever seen. And awesome, awesome match, telling the story of Owens, who's always been a little brat brother, who finally got his big win over his brother. And it was awesome the way he kind of just like he won the match. And it was just so fantastic. And it's always, this is one of the reasons why I always, like, overall thought Owen Hart was the better wrestler than Bret Hart.
Yeah, I think for anything you can say about WWF at this time, the storytelling into that, and I know a lot of people weren't into it because it was Owen and Bret and not, you know, one of, you know, a number of other guys, but I was, you know, it was so awesome. And the way this show just, the way it bookends is so fantastic, because we'll get to it at the end. But yeah, I mean, you know, Owen Hart finally, like, getting over on Big Brother and, you know, King of Hearts, and, you know, I think that came a little later on, but, you know, he was Owen Hart, and he finally gets that win over his brother, and, like, later on, how it kind of falls out from under him, and his reaction to it is just, it was fantastic.
Yeah, and when Bret Hart lost in the first match, you knew how the night was going to end, pretty much. You know, with him winning the championship. And he wasn't going to lose, like, two matches in one night, I don't think. So, the next match was Bam Bam Bigelow and Luna Vachon defeated Doink and Dink in 6 minutes and 9 seconds when Bigelow pinned Doink. So, I don't remember much about this match.
Yeah, it was just there, really. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I really hate to say it because, you know, he does have a lot of fans, but I never really thought that much of Bam Bam. I mean, when he first came out, you know, and they talked about how he could do all these things, but yet he never, ever did any of those things. By that point, it was like, he's just a big dude with a scary tattoo on his head.
Hey, the man did a cartwheel.
That was it, though. I was supposed to see, like, double moonsaults. And, moves out of the ring, but he just never did.
Yeah, he never did those anyway. At all.
Yeah, but they always talk like he could do all these different things, and all he did was a cartwheel.
And a drop kick, and he would slingshot over the top rope, do a splash, headbutt off the top rope.
I forgot about that one. That's right.
I thought he was one of the better big men.
Yeah, overrated.
so are you for big men. But anyway, Randy Savage beat Crush in Falls Count Anywhere match when Crush couldn't return to the ring in 60 seconds. Now, see, this match is stupid. Falls Count Anywhere.
Did he tie his like, legs up and he like pulled them on a rope and he was hanging upside down or some shit like that?
Except he didn't tie them off good and he just kind of like collapsed to the floor. And I just remember this was basically it was Texas Deathmatch rules, you know, where you pin the guy and they have to answer the count. But the thing was, like, if you pin them in the ring, then you had to throw them out of the ring so they can do the count. It was, like, fucking stupid.
The whole feud was stupid. I mean, it was just, you know,
it
was just...
Randy Savage. He said he kept him out of the Intercontinental title, like, battle royal. I said, what motivation would he have to keep you out of a battle royal or something?
Didn't the feud start, like, on a phone call?
There was some phone call when he got hurt by Yokozuna. And then he talked to, he was on the phone and on Raw, and then he didn't want to talk to Savage. I didn't even know they were friends in the first place. It's one of those things. And then he turned on him, and I don't know.
Yeah, he had the shitty face paint, and then, you know, the bright purple. It was just, I don't know. I mean, the Kona Crush, I never got it. I never got it with the guy. I remember always reading about him in magazines because he was in Portland. And he was a huge dude.
Yeah, he had
dude.
A kendo stick, right? He had like a kendo stick and he was a badass in Portland.
Yeah, and he was going to be like, he was going to be the shit. And it was just, oh, God, it just didn't work. And then later on, it's like I wanted to like Chronic because I really liked Adam Bomb. And I forget his rap and everything. But, God, it never worked.
It turned out Bill After Light to us all those years when he was in Portland.
God damn, we used to do stacks.
It's like he worked us about Dino Bravo, you know?
What about?
Like Dino Bravo was supposed to be this awesome badass worker, and then he just one of the worst workers ever.
He's on air, and he's like 50 pounds overweight. Picked up. Doing fake bench press competitions.
If I see Bill in at WrestleMania, and hopefully I will, I'm gonna have to bring that up and tell him how he worked us about Kona Crush.
WWF Women's Champion Linda Blaze pinned Leilani Kai in 3 minutes and 20 seconds. I think this was just a match to have somebody from the first WrestleMania on this show.
Here's another one I'll never remember. Well, you don't remember because it was so short, but let's say they would have given at least 4 or 5 more minutes. They would have actually had a decent match. So the other guy was...
It went 3 minutes and 20 seconds. It was like 3 minutes longer than I don't know, would have wanted to see it.
Well, you're gay.
The one thing, Medusa Michelli or Lunder Bray, she was still at least, like, for the most part, natural. And, like, you know, they had the white outfit and everything. And, you know, it was like, that was okay. And, like, Lani Kai, and they both could wrestle really well. But, you know, God, it's just, it was some, what a worthless title for them to have. Because outside of, like, you know, the Monster Ripper match, and there were a couple of things here and there. It was like, why do you even have Medusa here? It never made any sense to me. Or why have a women's title if you're not even going to use it? There was a ton of women that were out there at the time, and, like, still, you did bring back Leilani Kai. Not, you know, angry for her because she got a payday, but it's like, this is 1994, and Leilani Kai was older. I'll just say that.
Yeah,
I mean, really, the only time the Linda Blaze that it was really of any interest was when they brought in Bull Nakano.
Yeah.
Later that year.
Well, it looked like it was going to be good when they brought in Aja Kong, and then Aja Kong had to outshine everybody and they fired her. But I know you don't watch a lot of the women's wrestling from Japan, but did you ever see the Bull Nakano Aja Kong cage match?
No.
One where Bull Nakano does the leg drop off the top rope?
No, you know, I have not actually seen that.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because, like, I saw it not that, you know, a while back, but while they're fighting in the cage, they have seconds. And I'm not positive because it doesn't, like, she looks a little different, but I'm thinking one of them might have been Medusa, and her and this other second were having, like, an incredible brawl on their own just outside the ring. And it's like, I've always wanted to find out if that was Medusa or not.
It probably was, because, I mean, she was over there, and like that, you know, Cutie Suzuki, and I'm kind of thinking, like, all those, you know, All Japan women's wrestlers. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't doubt that at all, because I think she was on a couple of the VHS tapes even, too, where it was, like, her and I want to say Reggie Bennett, and there were a couple of, and you know, forgive me for saying this, world, but this is how they were listed in the wrestling magazines. Like, they were called, like, Slant-Eyed Slaughter. And, like, you know, I swear to God, and they were women's tapes, and if I'm not mistaken, she was actually on those things, and she was actually there.
You would have made Craig all appalled if he would have been on the line.
Hey, it's what it was called, like, Rise the Rising Sun.
Playing that slaughter, that's awesome. And I don't say that'd be racist, it's just funny somebody would have the gall to use that name back then. I remember that tape, though.
It was always on the opposite page that had the Jerry Lawler, the special Jerry Lawler beats Kurt Hennig, you know, commemorative AWA tape where Jerry sings.
It was weird because just like a few days ago, I was watching like one of those old Boston House shows from WWF, like in 1986 or something like that, and they had Melvin McIntyre, I can't remember those girls' names, just one of the random girls back then. And they brought in, who was it, Dump Matsumoto and Bull Nakano. I think they were a team back then or something like that.
Yeah.
And they brought them into Boston. You haven't lived here, you've heard Lord Alfred Hayes and Gorilla Monsoon commentate on a Dump Matsumoto and Bull Nakano match. It's awesome.
Somebody find me that link and send it to me.
It's on my YouTube page. So.
It is? Okay, I'll look for it.
So it's under the
hopefully it's Velvet and Princess Stephanie or whatever her name was. I think I liked her.
May have been something like that.
I always liked Velvet. I always wanted to
they
find
couldn't
that.
They couldn't get over the fact that there was a woman named Dump. They couldn't get over it.
Wasn't she Zero?
What?
In WCW, remember when they brought in some women, Japanese women wrestlers? Wasn't she Zero? Wasn't that like
was that Chibusa? Like, oh God, what the hell was her name?
I think it was Nagayo,
or something like that.
I think it was Dump that was Zero. I'd have to go back and check, but I just remember Dave was appalled of that gimmick.
Oh, well, Trace, they could F up anything. I remember I thought it was going to be like, because some of those girls I did like Sugar Sato, and there were a couple where it was like, all right, we're going to see the WCW Ladies Cruiserweight Tournament. And I don't think it ever actually aired, and I can't remember what WCW was working with at the time over there either. It wasn't, Airstein wasn't around yet. I'm trying to think of who it was, because it wasn't like All Japan Women. It was another group.
Was it Gaia?
That's exactly what it was. That's right. It was the Gaia Girls.
I always thought it was pronounced Gaia Girls. You learn
something. Okay, whatever.
But, yeah, I remember they brought in, like, I remember a tag match with this one kind of butch-looking girl who would kick the shit out of the other girls. It might have been Dynamite Kinsky or someone who looked like her, but... They had some. They actually, when they brought in those girls, they had good matches. It's just, you know, they didn't take advantage of what they had, you know, and they weren't there for very much long.
I just thought it was weird. There was a WCW Women's Cruiserweight title. It was like the weirdest thing.
Well, they hyped up like it was going to be there, and like they never showed it. They showed the regular women's title matches and everything, and it was always kind of shitty too. When they bring the women, it's like you're seeing people you've never seen before, and it's like kind of cool, and like girls who are like killing themselves. And on Nitro was one thing where they ignored them, but even on like Saturday night when you go back and watch those matches, and it's just, you know, it's Dusty and Tony Schiavone and whoever it is, and it's like they couldn't give an F less what was taking place.
Yeah, unless it was like Mike Tenay or somebody
always,
on commentary. Nobody knew what was going on.
But that was always what their attitude on Saturday about the women. Because I remember for goddamn 2 or 3 weeks they talked about how Misty Blue Sims is going to come in and defend her women's title. And Misty Boo sends this, Misty Boo sends that, and she gets in the ring and she's having her match probably with Linda Dallas, and not even a minute into the match, they cut to the back.
It was the Horton broke up, goddamn.
I understand that's a big deal and you cut to the match, but why the hell do you promote somebody for weeks and weeks and then in her match you pull to the back? Why didn't they do that then? That's 20 other jobber matches they had in that 2 hours.
I don't know.
You know,
somebody just brought her in so they could bang her. They weren't really going to put her on TV. I don't know.
So it upset me.
Oh, well. You're the one.
At least we got to see Mako Satomura when she was really young on WCW TV, which that's not too bad because she's still awesome now.
Who?
Mako Satomura. We get a chance to see her. She's awesome. She's the one of the people that started the Sendai promotion, girls promotion in Japan, and she can kick ass.
I can't wait to go to Shimmer and see. How do you pronounce her name? Kina?
Oh, Kana?
Kana, yeah, the little tiny girl who just kicks the shit out of people. I can't wait to see her.
She's awesome. If there's a couple, it's, you know, again, I know that the Dave will be, you know, I'm not saying he's dismissive of it, but, you know, women's wrestling is what it is, but there is like some real talent there. It's not like it's New Japan where all of a sudden in a couple of years, it's, you know, we're going to have a promotion that's rolling or anything like that. But, you know, at least individually, there's a lot of really, you know, still good women's wrestlers out there. Like, Tosaka Fujimoto. I mean, there's a handful of them there I think are really good.
I like the one that won't stop smiling that Ring of Honor brought in a few times, and she comes in for Shimmer, and she's like real pretty, and she's like a power. Somehow she's like a power, like wrestler, even though she doesn't look it. And even when she's getting her ass kicked, she's still smiling. It's awesome.
By the way, I don't know what the deal is, but Melissa Anderson, cheerleader Melissa, should have a job in WWE. Just saying. I don't know what any of this has to do with WrestleMania.
I guess it will segue, Amanda, we'll segue back into... You know why we segued into awesome women's wrestling? Because we knew Men on a Mission was about to come and talk about.
Men on a Mission defeated the tag team champions of the Quebecers via count out in 7 minutes 41 seconds. Only thing I remember about this is the Quebecers did a double suplex on Mabel, which always looked like he was going to break the ring every time he did the big spot.
To show you this false sense of security that we were all, like, you know, led into at this time as wrestling fans, they were in Madison Square Garden. And Oscar comes out rapping, and no one tried to kill Men on a Mission. In fact, they cheered, if that says anything at all.
Oscar was the best part of Men on a Mission. Oscar was awesome.
The best part
Oscar
of Men on a Mission
awesome.
Was when...
And what's his name? Spin Kick was awesome. Other than that, God, they sucked.
The best thing about Men on a Mission was it gave Gorilla Monsoon one of the greatest lines when Oscar would come out and say, whoop, there it is. Gorilla would say, whoops, there it is. You hear him, whoops, there it is. You know, I don't know. It's so stupid.
And probably the best thing about this match, too, was the fact that before it, they had interviews after Men on a Mission came rapping into the ring, and they had Ron DeShear of Up All Night, who was one of the hosts of the show.
Oh, I love Ron DeShear, too. So
and
awesome.
That's the thing. Everybody, if you grew up at that time and were around that age, you probably whacked it off all night because they played movies like Casual Sex and all that other stuff, even though it was all edited out. She was all giggly and bubbly and happy. And her and Burt Reynolds.
Every week I watch those shitty movies just to see her and her big titties.
It was like Ski School would come on there, all these like, you know, movies you'd see on Cinemax, and then they'd be like edited down, you know, for USA. And then we'd get Gilbert Gottfried on the weekend, but she
you'd
dared
have to, you'd
for
have to use
Shawn
your
Michaels.
Imagination watch. You'd have to use your imagination while you were jacking off.
Okay. Can we continue? The next match was World Champion Yokozuna defeated Lex Luger via DQ when Mr. Perfect was a special referee and he DQ'd Lex Luger for attacking Jim Cornette and Mr. Fuji. This match sucked.
Yeah, it did.
And the match sucked, and then the ending sucked too. I didn't like anything about this match, dude.
And then Perfect left. They didn't even have a feud.
Yeah, that's right. That even made it even more worse, you know.
And in hindsight, too, it's like as you got smarter later on, it still doesn't make any goddamn fucking sense. You know, like you got nothing out of this match then, and you don't get anything out of it now besides the fact they go, well, you know, they changed their minds, and obviously they screwed everything up because Lex didn't win. And it's like it was just shit.
Yeah, they just and it's basically they waited to WrestleMania to decide to de-push the guy they were pushing so hard and spending so much money on at the time.
Yeah, he did the whole All-American gimmick, too.
Goddamn, they put a lot of – they got behind that gimmick. They pushed the fuck out of that gimmick.
And then did a count-out finish.
Yeah.
And everybody celebrated like he won the title.
Oh, yeah.
The Lex Express. Anyway, the next match was Earthquake pinned Adam Bomb in 32 seconds. And I remember – Howard Finkel, who was the hair guy, the hair club for men guy? Do you remember the name?
I'm not just a member, I'm also the president.
Oh,
yeah.
What the hell, Cy Sperling or something?
Yeah, and he got...
Cy Sperling.
Gave Howard Finkel a hairpiece. That was a big thing. And then Harvey Whippleman made fun of him and ripped his tux. And then he shoved Harvey down and Adam Bomb went after him in Earthquake. Then came in and beat Adam Bomb in 32 seconds. This was nothing.
The coolest thing about Adam Bomb was fake contact.
That's right. Then the next match was the WWF IC champion Razor Ramon beat Shawn Michaels in 1847 in a ladder match.
And probably still the greatest ladder match of all time.
Yeah, I won't say no. It was awesome, and you know, they had the two IC titles and all that stuff, and yeah, it was awesome then. It's still awesome now, to be honest. And you know, there were the two matches on this show, and you know, there was Bret and Yokozuna at the end, but Owen and Bret and Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels. And for as depressed as the wrestling business was and as WWF was at that time, I mean, those are still two legendary, you know, 5-star matches that came out of that show.
What was awesome about the finish of this ladder match is usually you either do two things in a ladder match. You either have the guy so beat up that you can slowly climb up and win the match, or you fight at the top and you push one over and then you grab it. This one was awesome because Shawn just made it awesome because Shawn just kept trapping himself in the fucking ropes. First, his leg was trapped, then his arm was trapped, and it's like he did it all on his own, and he did it in a way that it almost looked like, you know what I mean? It's just like, and he's just fighting so hard to get out. You know, it's like.
And he gets out, but he's got something else hung up in the ropes. Like.
This is like it's like the big boot he took from Hulk Hogan. he just made like something that could like, you know, he just made something that should have been simple or something, and he just made it like 10 times more awesome.
And this was the match that really started off the whole ladder match. Ladder match craze that eventually got going. Well, I say this one kind of started it, but I think like the Hardys and Edge and Christian and that first match they had kind of brought it back later in the 90s. After that match, they started doing all the really crazy ladder matches. But yeah, this was actually the second one because Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels had a ladder match like the year before in 92. For like a Coliseum video or something like that, and because when I first heard the idea of a ladder match, it sounds so stupid. You're gonna hang the belt and you climb the ladder. Then when you see the match, it's like an incredible thing.
Well,
yeah, at least it was two at the time where it was like you're gonna climb the ladder because basically you know they presented it and sold it at the time of. Because you're going to beat the shit out of the other guy so bad, that's how you're going to have to go up there and climb the mountain and get it. You know, like the pole matches, as ridiculous as they sounded, you know, in the lead up to building up to them, it was all about maiming that person before you walked up gloriously and grabbed it. But Shawn Michaels, just taking the bumps that he did, I mean, it's just, well, I'm not saying,
well,
you saw the bumps, like.
Well, I gotta interrupt you on that one, because you're kind of merging both matches, okay? This match that Razor won, Razor took all the crazy bumps, and he got the heat on him the almost the whole match, and he won.
No,
the second one was Sean won. They had the heat on Sean the whole time, almost. It was like the exact opposite.
Four crazy bumps.
But Razor didn't. Hey, he sold more. He had to do more than Sean did in that match.
Oh. But still, I mean, well, I should know, not to even just Sean, but both of them, as far as, like, you've seen the bumps before, like a guy crotching himself on the ropes, but all of it in one match and everything that they did, yeah, I mean, it was awesome. And, yeah, you should really give credit to both of them. Yeah, it's just how Sean sold, just to me, the cartoon way he would sell and the faces he would make, you know, as good as Razor or anybody else is. Like, some of those bumps that he's taken in his career, just the way his face is sold them or flopping around, or even, like, you know, like you said, the Hogan big boot, you know, he sells, you know, very entertaining and very, you know, far better than, like, looking back, I ever gave him credit for then.
And it's but so fascinating about this Razor Ramon.
Shawn Michaels came out of this the star, though. Really,
yeah. No, he did. I mean, he did. I mean, I'm just explaining how, you know, they got the heat on. The guy who got the heat on in each match is the one who won.
Yep.
But people got paid. Yeah, it's so sad remembering this Razor Ramon. I mean, because this is like his peak, man. This is when he's at his fucking best, and now
he
look
was,
at him.
I think he's kind of underrated as a worker. I really thought he was very good at that time.
I thought he was good when he was Big Scott Hall. You know,
it didn't really come together till like he started being like Razor or Diamond Stud. We shaved that mustache off. Maybe that lessened the weight on him or something. I don't know what the deal was.
Well, when he first came out as Big Scott Hall, he was perfect. He had a lot of potential, and then he just stagnated. And then like when he went into WCW for that short run, where I remember he dropped Terry Funk 2 weeks in a row, basically, and he just. I don't know. He plateaued for like the longest time, and then when he came back to the Diamond Stud, it's like he had a good look, but it's like there was nothing really there. And then he started cutting those awesome promos as the bad guy, you know, getting ready to be you, and he just turned into like all kinds of awesome.
Yeah. We go to the main event. You had Bret Hart pin Yokozuna in 10 minutes, 30 seconds to win the WWF title, and Roddy Piper was the special referee for this match. Real quick, the celebrities, you had Little Richard was the vocalist. He did the, you know, America the Beautiful. Burt Reynolds was the announcer. Donnie Wahlberg from NKOTB was the announcer for the two world title matches. Had Seth Sterling and Jenny Garth, who would have rather been anywhere else. I know they had a skit they wanted to do.
How come they don't have Ronda on here?
Huh?
They don't have Ronda on here.
She wasn't that big of a celebrity.
Wait, any love for Burt Reynolds?
I disagree. Yeah, Burt Reynolds. It says Burt Reynolds has been that. Remember Burt Reynolds had that big ass cast on his head?
Yeah, because somebody stuffed a mug in or something. Or he got mugged.
I wonder what he got up with Ty Sperling that night about the hairpiece.
I just remember the best part of this match was after the match, because they sent in like a Razor and Spark Plug, Bob Holly, and a couple other dudes to go put Bret on his shoulders, and Burt Reynolds and Donnie Wahlberg and Ronda Shearer are all celebrating with them in the ring. It was awesome. Burt Reynolds is giving high fives to Bret Hart and. Bret Hart was getting put over by the bandit. It was awesome.
And again, better for me that Bret Hart ends up winning the WWF title. With that said, you know, the body slam, you know, all that bullshit that they did with Lex Luger and Yokozuna, you know, it's still amazing in hindsight. It's just like, you know, what ended up happening out of that show. Although, because of that, too, like you said at the beginning, Owen Hart, when everybody is celebrating in the ring, and Owen Hart just walks out and he's sitting there shaking his head, that was awesome. That was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Like that prick, my prick brother again. He, you know, everything I was trying to fight against, and then he still, the son of a bitch, comes out on top.
Yeah, that was the peak of their feud, because it led to that shitty ass cage match, unfortunately.
That's right. Do you want to throw out the plugs real quick?
Don't we got like 25 minutes?
Yeah, well, I just didn't know if you want to do it at an hour and a half or not yet. Do you want to get through?
Oh, I'll do it. Everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download the stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows from the Angry Marks Network, like Stevie J's show, The Angry Marks Show itself. So check out AngryMarks.com. You can always listen to us at BlogTalkRadio.com/Cotrere and older shows at BlogTalkRadio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio, and you can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo or Ed in San Antonio. And you can also, if you go to the update on the front page of the WrestlingObserver.com website, there should be a link to the Facebook page for all the WrestleMania info and everything going on with the F4W Empire when we are in New York in 3 weeks from today.
Oh. Okay, go to WrestleMania 11. It was April 2nd, 1995, in Hartford, Connecticut, and they drew 15,000 people. And this wasn't much of a... This was another one that was just like a two-match show, in my opinion.
This was a lot of smoke and mirrors on this show, because it was like, you know, LT and Bam Bam, and, you know, I think the biggest deal about this show was, like, Shawn Michaels saying he was going to bring out, you know, Jenny McCarthy, and he made it sound like, you know, they were effing. And
no,
Pamela Anderson. It's like, oh, the Pamela Anderson. It's like all that, like that stuff I remember more than really anything else. And it was like Brett and Bob back in the I Quit match. And, you know, but it was like, it was about the celebrities and about everything else other than really like WWF. It was just, it was all smoke and mirrors for them not having a good year.
This was, let me run down the celebrities real quick. Salt and Pepper were the vocalists. They did the theme for Lawrence Taylor. You had
they were awesome.
Nicholas Turturro, who was he the ring announcer? I think he was a ring. Yeah, he was a special ring announcer. Pamela Anderson.
He was like on a cop show or something.
He's on NYPD Blue. They showed them up on Monday when they did the Paul Bearer stuff. When they were searching for Yokozuna, and they had Paul Bearer in the dress. He was disguised because they thought he was. He was behind Yokozuna missing or something. I don't know. But, yeah, he was on NYPD Blue, and Pamela Anderson, she was supposed to come to the ring with Shawn Michaels. Jennifer McCarthy was, I don't even know why she was there, but she just ended up there. Jonathan Taylor.
Well, she ended up coming out with Shawn. And
right.
Pamela ended up coming out with
They said that Pamela and Shawn had a disagreement, and she left. So.
Yeah, well, and then supposedly there was supposed to be like an altercation where Tommy Lee like tried to attack Shawn backstage. That was one of those things that never happened, but was like TMZ wasn't around at the time, but it was like the TMZ story of the time. And I do remember as hot as Pamela Anderson was, Jenny McCartney actually looked better on the show than she did.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah, Jonathan Taylor Thomas from Home Improvement. Who had a great bit with Bob Backlund, where Bob Backlund was asking him all these questions and he answered all of them right, and he got all flustered and said, "Kids think they know everything," and then he just walked off. And I think they played the test together or something like that. You had Reggie White, Stephen Michael, Ken Norton Jr., Chris Spielman, Ricky Jackson, Carl Banks. They were like the in the corner of LT for the main event, and Alan and American League umpire Larry Young was the referee for Undertaker and King Kong Bundy. Was that during the referee strike or something? Wasn't that going on? Or a baseball strike?
I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I hate baseball.
Anyway, the first
match
was...
You know, unfortunately, this fucking match, is because of this fucking match, we had to listen to Steve McMichael for a couple of years on Nitro.
Him and his stupid little, you know, I love animals, but goddamn, I like to kick the shit out of that little dog.
He didn't like the chihuahua?
No, you should never dress up your animals. It's just wrong.
This is true. I just y'all said Jonathan Taylor Thomas. It's like he was going through puberty during that Diesel Shawn Michaels match. Just watching those two women.
The first match was you had Lex Luger and David Boy Smith defeated Jacob and Eli Blue, who were the Bruiser Brothers, and they were managed by.
Hold on, was this like a 2-hour WrestleMania or something?
I don't remember.
You got seven matches, and the longest one's 20 minutes.
I don't know.
It was a whole show.
And
the matches barely last over an hour.
I don't know.
But that's the thing. There was so much bullshit. You know, because they had the long video packages, you know, as far as, like, Lawrence Taylor learning to wrestle and doing all that stuff. It's like there was so much gaga and bullshit on this show for what I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I
think
that
Bundy being back. You know, they were doing the ESPN commercials at the time. This is SportsCenter, and it was like, you know, Bundy was, you know, faced Undertaker, and it was, like, again, it just the whole thing was just a lot of just goofy.
Yeah, and then when you think about it, the intros, they introduced all the football players one at a time. They introduced all the bad guys one at a time. They had Salt and Pepper scene. They had Bam Bam, but you know, attack Salt and Pepper, which was awesome. They did an awesome sell job. And so I guess you're right. It was just like more than half the show was just bullshit.
Yep. Luger and Davey Boy beat the Blue Twins with Uncle Zebekiah, who's on TV now, Zeb Coulter, with their manager. Razor Ramon.
Are they two neo-Nazis?
Do what?
Aren't they like neo-Nazis now?
No, they're just against the people that commit crimes. Like,
no, I'm talking about Jacob and Eli Blue. Weren't they neo-Nazis?
I remember, didn't one of them wear, like, the SS shirt on TNA pay-per-view?
Yep. Yeah, it was... God, that's right. Yeah. I mean, what exactly was the Blue Brother gimmick again with Uncle Zebekiah?
They were like four-man Bruiser Brodies.
Something like that.
Yeah, they were trying to look like Bruiser Brody.
Hmm. But they were doing
Ron
that everywhere. You know, with the wild hair and stuff like that. They were doing that everywhere they went. So, Razor Ramon.
I did like their run as Creative Control.
Patrick and Gerald?
Yes.
And he had Virgil with Kane.
It was like Russo was behind the table. It was like, all right, so which one of you is Patterson? And they both just like pointed at each other.
And you had Virgil, his name was Shane. I remember that. This was after his Curly Bill era, you know, with the with Texas Redneck. Razor Ramon beat IC Champion Jeff Jarrett, beat DQ in 13 minutes, 32 seconds. It was probably one of the better matches on here, because they always had pretty good matches together. But not much to this match, I don't remember.
Yeah, this is when it was JERRET.
That's right, double J, just there with the roadie.
And he had those awesome sunglasses that like lit up. He did have the most awesome rhinestone cowboy gimmick costume ever.
And that, I'm sorry, the theme, you know, people hate the theme. He actually had a couple of pretty good themes as far as what fit his character, and that slow, whatever it was, Tennessee Waltz shitty music that he came out to that sounded like, you know, what do they call those, MIDI files? And he was, I don't know, I loved Jeff Jarrett at that time because he was just such an over-the-top, just goofy guy, and everybody I know just hated him so much, and we were sitting there watching it, and everybody was so pissed off when Razor Ramon didn't win the title just because they hated Jarrett that much.
In the next match, you had The Undertaker pinned King Kong Bundy in a shitty match. I think the thing that stood out here was I think this is where Kama stole the urn and melted it down. And I guess Undertaker stole
it
back.
He made a chain.
Yeah, he made a chain and to wear around his neck. To continue the run of Undertaker having some pretty bad feuds in his early years. Next match was he had Owen Hart and Yokozuna defeated the Smoking Guns to win the tag team titles and Hart and Billy. I like Owen Hart and Yokozuna as a tag team. I think they're pretty good together.
Yeah, they were good. And the Smoking Guns were pretty awesome, too. I always liked the Smoking Guns.
Yeah, you can complain about that at all. Owen and Yokozuna were, I'm not saying underrated as a tag team, but for whatever reason, they did seem to play off each other really, really well. And Fuji standing there just, the shitty smile and Cornette ranting and raving as though it was, really good. And, Smoking Guns too, shitty mustaches aside, they were actually a pretty good team. And, they had the cool backers and the head shrinkers and, a couple other teams around that time. So it wasn't all bad.
I think the Smoking Guns, their thing that held them back was they just had the whole cowboy gimmick kind of covered it up. Like some people didn't want to give them credit for their work just because they had kind of a silly gimmick at the time.
I thought they were awesome, and I knew they were going to be awesome. Like when I say I used to watch the little thing on my TV, and I could tell back then that they were going to be awesome. They had a great matches back then.
The Goblins are another team. Like, they didn't have great matches or anything, but it was like when they were Tex Flassinger and Shanghai Pierce, they were pretty good. And it's like when they actually got a chance to do tag team wrestling, they were actually pretty good when, the whole thing wasn't just, 2 minutes leading up to who's getting hit with the bucket.
Yeah. And see, the next match is Bret Hart beat Bob Backlund in an I Quit match. This match sucked.
He's just biased against Bob Backlund. This is an awesome match.
Well, you're clearly stupid.
I disagree.
The chair's bias coming out.
I'm not against pity wrestling matches. That's the only bias I have. This was boring as hell. It was, and he didn't even say I quit. He like gurgled or something. I don't know. Only good part of this match was where Roddy Piper was a special referee. Bret Hart had Bob Backlund in a submission hold, and Bob Backlund said, no, he doesn't quit. So Piper, just to be wise, asked, Bret, do you quit? While Bret had the submission hold on Bob Backlund. That was the best part of this, the high spot of this match. This match was a horrible match. I feel bad for Bret Hart. What happened to the shitty match at WrestleMania?
Whatever.
Well, at least those memories were, wiped away after that with, Pamela Anderson and Jenny McCarthy's boobs.
Yeah.
Although the Vince match was worse. So, a couple years ago. The next match was WWF Champion Diesel pinned Shawn Michaels in 20 minutes, 35 seconds. This is probably the best match on the show, I thought.
I disagree, dude. I think we want to say that Bam Bam Bigelow is better.
I like Diesel and Shawn Michaels better.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll tell you, Bigelow was such a surprise because it wasn't awful. And it was good, and it was just – it was so over the top. I could see how people like that more. I guess, I'm still probably taking Diesel Shawn Michaels. I'd rather go that direction.
What for me puts it over the top is when they introduce all the football players and they're playing the theme for Monday Night Football. But the match was good, but it's like, how good can a Diesel match actually be,
I've seen plenty of good Diesel matches.
I've seen plenty of bad Diesel matches.
I didn't say you didn't have a bad one, but I've seen a lot of good ones.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels helps.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels.
Bret Hart. Anything?
Yeah, well. Did he ever have
a good match?
I was saying this was
the Survivor Series that year. It was 95 with
He almost had a good match. I was going to say he almost had a good match with Ron Simmons, but he had some like white powder kept falling in his eyes from his hair.
He had a good, great match with Jeff Jarrett on the TNA pay-per-view. He's had a bunch of good matches. He just biased because I don't know who he's been.
He got outworked in like a 5-second match with Bob Backlund.
That wasn't a televised.
It's still, Bob Backlund was a better worker in that match.
Well, Diesel beat him in 8 seconds to win the title in Madison Square Garden. So there. Diesel pinned Shawn Michaels in 20 minutes and 35 seconds. And this is when Shawn brought Sid in. And I guess it was somebody's idea of a joke. They gave Sid a knife to cut the turnbuckle part or something. Because they didn't have scissors on them, they gave him a pocket knife instead. I don't know. So.
I don't know. What the fuck is that all about? That's pretty fucking dick move right there.
I remember Earl Hebner. The thing was that Earl Hebner had hurt his knee in this match. And then after he hurt his leg, every time he's doing the count, he's grabbing his leg. It looks like he's putting himself in the scorpion death block. And he's just holding on to his leg while he's doing this count. It looks so totally absurd. But, And Diesel pinned Shawn Michaels with the powerbomb, and the next night is when Shawn did turn on Shawn, and Shawn became a babyface. So we had the great run of Diesel and Sid in those matches. Then we had Lawrence Taylor pin Bam Bam Bigelow in 11 minutes 42 seconds. This was a good match.
Lawrence Taylor was blown the fuck up by the end of this match.
He basically just laid on
Bam Bam after.
Yeah. They had to pick him up, physically pick him up and carry him to the back.
Yeah. But he put in, I mean, this match, this one the boxer who fought fucking the Big Show, why can't I think of his damn name right now?
Floyd Mayweather?
Mayweather. These are like the two best celebrity matches ever. I mean, he actually did shit that looked real and looked good. Got an awesome flying shoulder tackle off the top. I mean, he looked good. And Bigelow, I'll give him credit. This is probably his best match ever that I remember him being in. And, it was awesome. I mean, everything about, like, Salt and Pepper were awesome. Bam Bam, you know, trying to, you know, Salt and Pepper talking shit to Bam Bam and then him making a move toward him and then getting all scared was awesome. You know, like I said, the Monday Night Football music playing was fucking awesome, and I mean it was like you were saying earlier, this wasn't about the wrestling, it was about Gaga bullshit, you know, from out of wrestling with everything involved, but I mean it worked for me. I mean I thought it was, everything about it was awesome.
Oh hell yeah. I mean it was just, again, it's the thing that people remember the most off of this show is the fact that it was like, you know, I mean if you watch it now, I'm sure somebody's saying, well, it's supposed to be so great, you know, like it's the best celebrity match of all time and, you know, no, it's not or something like that. Fine, I guess you could say that. But for the time, I mean, it was awesome. And Lawrence Taylor still meant something, even though he's kind of a goofy and those shitty round. I hate his glasses in the lead up to this. Those round sunglasses just always really annoyed me for some reason. But that's got nothing to do with anything. You know, the match itself was awesome. And you can tell, even just as a wrestling fan, you know, seeing celebrities and people like that in wrestling, you know, at that time, there weren't a whole lot of good ones. You know, there was like the 20-man battle royal at WrestleMania 2 and stuff like that. But usually when a celebrity was in there, you know, you could see a whole bunch of air and punches, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But this was just a really good match, and you knew no matter what, how good, you know, Bigelow was, it working the whole thing. Although I did feel kind of bad for him because even at that time, it's like, damn, he lost to a guy that's like, he's a football player who's leaving. He's probably going to get made fun of, and that's exactly what they did to Bigelow.
It was pretty much the end of his, main event career. But It was still great. I still like enjoyed it.
Well, this was supposed to make Bam Bam a big baby face, because remember, it, coming off of it, he was going to do the big baby face turn. And he, I don't know, he ran afoul of the Click or something.
Yeah.
So.
I forget who told the story, too. I heard not long ago how well Lawrence Taylor treated everyone. That, like, afterwards, they went out to some, you know, club or something
like
that.
He bought everybody crack rocks so they could smoke after the show? That's fucking awesome.
Hey, it was the new generation.
actually, you know, the only guy who probably was smoking crack was probably Davey. But, I mean, if it would have been a few years earlier, he could have had, like, Jake the Snake and the Junkyard Dog and the Iron Sheik and the Superfly and... Well, he basically had the whole roster on crack.
Allegedly.
Oh, Bret Hart was on the show.
Actually, this was Lawrence Taylor's first opportunity to, like, be involved in wrestling. Like, in 1991, he was a second for Lex Luger against the Big Cat in the Meadowlands for their football match in WCW.
I didn't remember that until you said it.
And then that was the one where Flair regained the world title from Sting, and then they do this bid where they're in LT's restaurant celebrating the world title win with LT, like, later in the night.
I remember that.
You know what that may, I tell you what that may have been, the story that I heard, actually, maybe it was that one, with Sting, when it may have been J.J., you know, it may have actually been the J.J. Dillon kayfabe commentary thing or something like that, because I actually heard it not long ago. I think that may have been it.
Well, we got 5 minutes of live air time, so I guess let's do one more. But since we got just 5 minutes of live air first, Shemp, do you got anything you want to put?
The next one's a short one. There's not many matches here. We had WrestleMania 12, March 31st.
Why are you being rude? I'm telling Shemp he can plug his stuff before we go off the air, and you're just butting in. I thought I was the one feeding him. Can you believe that disrespect, Shemp? God.
I can. You know what? It doesn't matter. We can blow through WrestleMania 12 real quick because, you know, everyone knows where to find me. It's actually teaming up with my friend Brian Alvarez to do radio shows together, unlike you and him, Ed.
Yeah, well, you know, as much as you're a jerk, he's like 10 times as jerk you are.
This is true. And he actually says his marriage has calmed him down. It's made you worse.
It's made him more of an asshole, actually.
Okay, WrestleMania 12, March 31st, 1996, in Anaheim, California, at the Arrowhead Pond, they drew 18,852 people. They had the pre-show match, the Mighty Donnas beat the Godwins in the finals of the tournament to win the vacant tag team championships. And then the Nacho Man went to a no contest with the Huckster. Billionaire Ted was a special referee. I think they both died during this match.
So the match itself sucks, but those promos that they aired during the Monday Night War were awesome. I don't care what anyone says. Okay, what was it? The Nacho Man and the Nacho Man,
the
Huckster, and both those guys the guys who played on the Nacho Man and the Huckster were fucking awesome, and they should have had jobs forever.
Scheme Gene.
Yeah. I like to think that they brought in Randy Hogan from Crockett to play the Hogan. I'm not sure if that.
Bulk Logan.
The first match was Vader, Owen Hart, and Davey Boy Smith defeated Jake Roberts, Yokozuna, and Ahmed Johnson when Vader pinned Jake the Snake.
Camp Cornette. I did love that.
Yeah.
Was there a storyline behind this match?
Yeah, the Yokozuna had turned on Yokozuna like a month before.
Okay.
When Davey Boy and Owen Hart attacked him, and then Vader came back and he attacked Yokozuna. So that was the reason for the match. Roddy Piper and Goldust battled in the first half of the Hollywood Backlot Brawl. It was a pre-tape segment. And this match
this
started.
This is fucking awesome. This is
match
fucking
started
so awesome.
This was started as the second match on the show and ended right before the main event.
This was almost like a parody.
Yeah, it was. Like, they did the OJ thing in the, on the chase, you know, where they take off in their cars and stuff. But this match was awesome. Piper was awesome just beating the shit out of Dustin. Dustin just took an awesome beating.
He just, you could hear he was nailing him with those right hands. I mean, apparently they were, he was just really laying them in. And I remember Piper, he had to do the, Goldust hit him with the car. And then they showed the OJ footage for the rest of the show. And, yeah, I think we've seen this footage before. And, Steve Austin beat Savio Vega in 10 minutes. This was Steve Austin's first WrestleMania match. It was a decent match, I remember.
Yeah, they had good chemistry. They had a lot of good matches against each other. And
The Ultimate Warrior returned and pinned Triple H in 1 minute and 36 seconds.
He's still
one of my favorite matches of all time.
Do what?
Like Shiv just said, he still hasn't gotten over it, and that's one of the reasons I still love this match. Because Hunter will always have to live with this fucking match.
I doubt he cares.
I bet you he does.
I bet you he don't.
I bet you he both. Bring him back, Riff. I need to get my win. Fuck Brock Lesnar. Bring in the Ultimate Warrior. He's going to be there he's going to be in New York anyway.
Okay. This is also the debut of Sable. Came to the ring with Triple H. This is the debut of the Wild Man Mark Mero in the back when they did a little bit with Triple H and Mark Mero start that feud. And so
that was ridiculous, too, because do you remember Mark Mero's just like, look at me, look into my eyes, I'm crazy, I'm wild, I'm the Wild Man. It was just like, this is
Johnny
ridiculous. Yeah.
You were like half gay last time I saw you.
He still looked half gay when he was a Wild Man. What are you talking about? But,
he just didn't have the puffed up hair.
He was still decent in the ring until he went boxer and then he sucked.
Well, that's because he hurt his knee and that kind of killed him.
Well, that and getting powerbombed by his wife.
Well, yeah.
But you know, I mean, as much heat as Mark Merrill gets, he still was fucking stable for a long time. So he's still more man than all of us combined.
Not more than me. Speak for yourself.
Yeah, whatever.
That is Brock Lesnar's wife you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. That's the smartest thing in the world to do.
The Undertaker pinned Diesel in 16 minutes and 46 seconds. I remember this being a decent match.
Yeah, I would have never thought it was that long. I don't remember it being that long, but I guess obviously it was. But, yeah, it was actually pretty good.
You don't remember it being very long because the next match lasted over an hour.
Oh, the Iron Man match with Michaels and Bret, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have guessed 16 minutes. I would have figured it was like, I swear it was like under 10, like in half that time. But I guess I don't remember it as being offensive then if I didn't think it was that long.
Actually, the next match was the continuation of the Backlot Brawl. So, actually, I think Piper and Goldust may have gone longer than Bret and Shawn.
How did Dustin Rhodes get matches like that in, like, you know, the one where he's on the flat belly against the Blacktop Bully? And how the hell did he get these matches?
Because people don't like his dad.
I just remember that they made it back into the arena, and then he kissed Roddy Piper in the ring. Roddy Piper grabbed his nuts and squeezed them. And then jerked his outfit off, and he had like a bustier or something, and a brassiere and garters and stuff on underneath. It was weird. Anyway, in the main event, you had Shawn Michaels pin Bret Hart in 1 hour and 1 minute and 52 seconds of overtime in an Iron Man match to win the WWF title. I think it was a pretty overrated match myself. It's a good match. It's just, I think, overrated by a lot of people.
Well, after watching Ric Flair wrestle 1 hour draws all the time, this match was pretty boring. I mean, that's spots.
Oh, you knew how far, what they were doing when, you know, they, with how they were pacing the match, you knew there wasn't going to be a fall. I mean,
yeah,
pretty much tell that.
Yeah, they, it's like, the best way, like, in like maybe like the, in UFC kind of a thing, it's like, you know, like, it's a title match, so they're fighting five rounds instead of three, so they pace themselves, and then the fights end up usually being kind of shitty. That's exactly what this match kind of was, just with pro wrestling. I mean, because they pace themselves at a slow pace at times, and it just, I don't know, it just, to me, it wasn't that exciting. I mean, I lost kind of interest in it at times.
Yeah, same here. I thought it was just like, all right, me, because I love those, like, Steamboat Flair matches and Wyndham and Flair, you know, on TV that went 60 minutes, and it never bothered me. And it was just like, I remember they were announcing the match. It was like, an Iron Man. So you knew it was going to go long, and then when they weren't doing anything with the falls, it was like, oh, Christ, you know, we're going to be here a while.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when you look at who's in this match, this probably, out of all the matches in WrestleMania history, you probably expect the most out of this one, don't you think? Just with these two guys, as far as quality of the match, you expect more.
Yeah, exactly. They kept it too slow paced. It would have been better being a 30-minute Iron Man match.
And the best spot in the match was when the poor timekeeper got fucking super kicked to hell.
Oh, dude.
I just remember that spot. That spot's fucking, Jesus, I saw Jerry Lawler. He fucking jumped out of his chair.
And I always hated the nickname Super Sock for Jose Lothario, but that's just a small thing.
Kind of like something big you put on your foot.
That's it.
Right.
Super Sock. I don't know.
I guess
Sean hated having Jose Lothario around, which is, okay, it's kind of funny in hindsight, too, because it was all about, you know, the little guy doing it for his mentor.
Yeah. I like the entrance.
Well, his mentor ended up stealing money from him and getting fired and stuff.
Now, Sid gave him a heart attack. He hit him with the camera.
Yeah, but the reason that Shawn Michaels' soul kind of ended was because Jose supposedly was stealing money or something.
Well, he's Mexican. What do you expect?
I don't know how much money you can steal from a fucking wrestling school.
Maybe
hey,
he went out to
his
blazer
while he was. They didn't have these, like, giant classes. I mean, it wasn't that big. I don't know. It's all weird.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't Shawn Michaels was an asshole, because this is also, like, besides falling out with his mentor, Jose Lothario, at this time, he fell out with one of his best friend's tag team partners, Paul Diamond, and he did a dick move to Paul Diamond, and that ended their friendship because, I had a supervisor at UPS who lived next door to Paul Diamond, and this guy wasn't even a wrestling fan, so I kind of believe him with this story, was that Paul Diamond was living at this house, but that Shawn owned the house. He was just renting it to Paul Diamond. Well, then Shawn, without telling Paul, went and leases the house to somebody else and just tells Paul he has to fucking get the fuck out. And it's like Paul's like all of a sudden, like, you know, doesn't have, you know, a place to live. It's not like he's making that much money being a teacher at Texas Wrestling Alliance, so he ended up saying fuck it and going back to Canada. And so that wrestling school ended like a lot of like things with Shawn Michaels as far as like relationships with friends and mentors.
Well, that's because Shawn Michaels was friends with Tatanka, and he was pissed at Paul Diamond flying his Tatanka's wife into town and in WWF and banging her like he used to. That's what the deal was there.
Basically, what I'm getting out of this is you never trust anyone from San Antonio.
True.
I don't know about that thing.
You never heard the story of the Paul Diamond flying Tatanka's wife? He was cheating on her. She was cheating on him with Tatanka and flew him into the town so she could bang him in the hotel.
No, I never heard that
story.
That's
where Tatanka says.
Oh, I was thinking the wrong Tanaka. I was thinking Tatanka.
I'm thinking it's Tatanka. It's Tatanka's wife.
Yeah, but no, I thought you were talking about the Indian.
Oh. I did say Tatanka. That's what I said. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, I thought you meant Pat Tanaka. I'm confused.
No. I'm talking about Chris Chavis. Jesus Christ.
I think
he closed the
door. I think we're already in the show already. Well, anyway, everybody come back next week. It might be our... Let's see. When the fuck is this one? No, we got like 2 more shows to go. So, maybe we'll get a little closer to the end of Brian Alvarez thinks we will. But before we leave, Chen, do you got anything you want to talk about before we go?
Not really. Brian and I will be on Sunday on Observer Live because I know everybody loves that show. It is the most listened to show for F4WOnline.com.
There's no fucking radio, that's why.
That's just not by anybody on the board.
It ain't got nothing to do with you. It ain't got nothing to do with you. But
yes, it does.
Since I was nice enough to let you promote that show, Listen Observer Live on this show, I hope you at least have the courtesy to promote our show on Listen Observer Live.
Of course. I'm sure Brian will actually say something about it.
Something bad.
That'd be like one of those obscure references on Raw that Dave says, well, why do they say that? Nobody understands that reference. You know, if he brings up our show on that one.
Yeah. Kachera, you have anything you want to talk about before we go or say anything?
Go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kachera. On the house show, I got some WWF house shows up there. And there's one from San Juan, Puerto Rico. And if you want to see some excitement, it's an outdoor show. Big John Studd against Hulk Hogan. And then the rain, a thunderstorm starts.
I remember that show.
It has the whole show up there. And there's something to see. If you've heard about, outdoor shows when it started to rain. And so you should check it out. It's pretty neat.
I didn't actually see you just said you have the show. I didn't actually see the show, but they showed the majority of the show on primetime.
Yeah, that's what it was. They had a few matches. And I think they had like Tito Santana and Randy Savage, and I can't remember the others. But Hulk Hogan and Big John Studd, not two of the most coordinated big men, slipping and sliding around in a wet ring. That's something to watch.
Ooh, yeah. Bad News Brown and Randy Savage. I like Chris channel.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and wrap up then. And, once again, everyone, check out if you're going to WrestleMania weekend, check out the Facebook page. I think we, more than doubled the people that were on before Brian mentioned it on the update. And just to check out that, and that has all the information for Empire get-togethers. And also, we also have a list of just about everything that's going on that weekend. So you can find your wrestling fix by going to that page. So everyone check it out. Just go to the WrestleObserver.com front page, click on the update, and it's right there. And so everybody come back next week, and we will continue then.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. Find out how good you are. You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up. Tonight.